This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
GM's Garage Sale. Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. General Motors already has a for sale sign on its Hummer brand, and the garage sale at GM could soon include names like Buick, Saturn, and Saab. The Wall Street Journal reports the automaker is thinking about whether to sell or stop production of more of its brands. Chevrolet and Cadillac are the only names the company considers core to its business. The Journal says GM is also planning to cut thousands of white-collar jobs. The company has a goal of returning to profitability in 2010. U.S. auto sales hit a 15-year low in June. GM and the others are dealing with a credit crunch and rising prices for raw materials and oil. All of those things are getting attention this week at the G8 summit. Talks got underway today in Japan, but the hopes for the meeting aren't too great. A lot of the leaders are politically weak. President Bush is a lame duck. Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
The issues facing this year's G8 summit are daunting. Rising food and energy prices, the credit crunch, and a slowing global economy. The White House hopes the group can reach agreement on aid to Africa and global food and energy security. But even President Bush admits,
it's tough to get consensus.
Georgetown University International Affairs Professor Charles Kupchin says the group is still relevant. It's just
the nature of the problems that they face are particularly gnarly.
The G8 can't magically reduce demand for oil or increase food production, but Reginald Dale of the Center for Strategic and International Studies says the group could be more effective if it expanded its membership.
One of the biggest challenges is to integrate, particularly China, and not rebuff it.
Dale says without rising economies like China and India, the G8 does risk becoming irrelevant. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
But maybe hosting the G8 is just what Japan needed. The Nikkei was up nearly 1% today, breaking a 12-day losing streak. European shares are edging higher this morning. The Dow opens today after the long weekend at 11,288. It picked up 73 points Thursday, but was down 0.5% for the week. Give us a little saliva, we'll give you a map of your DNA. That pretty much sums up one of the fastest growing sectors in biotechnology, so-called personalized genetics. Today, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services kicks off a public meeting to discuss how these companies should be regulated. Stacey Vanek-Smith reports.
Some states are already cracking down. California recently sent letters to more than a dozen genetic testing companies, telling them they can't solicit business from state residents. New York has made similar moves. They worry consumers could get the wrong information about their DNA. Edward Abrams directs the Personalized Medicine Coalition. He says regulators should be careful not to stifle innovation on a new scientific frontier.
Consumer genomics is pushing that frontier forward because of its ability to market directly to consumers.
California and New York say genetic testing companies need state licenses. Linda Avey is the co-founder of personalized genetics company 23andMe. She says industry standards are needed, but that companies should help set them.
Because we're working with very complicated technologies, we do feel like that's something that we can do together as an industry.
Meanwhile, the Federal Trade Commission is investigating some personal genetics companies for false advertising. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Medtronic Foundation, partnering with Teach for America to bring math and science teachers to under-resourced public schools. More information at teachforamerica.org and by Gather.com. where friends keep up with the people, conversations, and moments that matter most. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com.
One of the world's best-known public broadcasters will publish its annual report tomorrow. The BBC will open its books and explain how it spent its annual revenue of more than $6 billion. The bulk of the BBC's money comes from a kind of tax called the license fee. Not something every Brit likes to pay for. Stephen Beard reports from London.
The BBC has been broadcasting this rather sinister message.
Your town, your street, your home. It's all in our database.
A helicopter hovers, a dog barks, there's a knock on the door. The message? It's a criminal offence to watch TV without buying a license.
And impossible to hide if you don't. It's all in the database.
The Orwellian tone has infuriated Eamon Butler of the free market think tank, the Adam Smith Institute.
I think it's absolutely outrageous that public authorities should be able to bully the general public by television adverts which suggest that they're all criminals and that they're going to get police helicopters and dogs on them.
It's a fact of life in Britain. If you own a TV, you must buy a license, currently costing $260 a year. That's how the BBC supports itself. But the license fee ad has triggered a fresh debate about this system.
If you were to try to invent a really bad way of financing public broadcasting, you'd come up with a license fee.
Jonathan Miller has waged a long campaign against the license fee. He says this $6 billion a year subsidy for the BBC is unfair.
Forces people to pay for a service whether they like it or not. It doesn't even matter whether you watch the BBC's programmes, you have to pay it just to own a TV set.
Welcome to The Weakest Link. Many of the nine people in the studio here today could win up to £10,000.
He says that with brainless quiz shows and lots of other populist fare, the BBC shouldn't get a subsidy. But the BBC has its supporters.
It produces some astonishingly good television, some very, very good radio.
Ben Fenton of the Financial Times claims the licence fee is a better way of paying for public broadcasting than the American system of telethons, corporate sponsorship and government funding.
I think that what is produced on the BBC is of markedly higher quality than one gets, I'm sorry to say this, on public service broadcasting in the United States.
Ouch! But at least the American system is voluntary and therefore may prove more durable than the British licence fee. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
For more from The Morning Report, visit marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. Thanks for tuning in.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.